It's Lars Larson. Thanks for listening to my podcast and for listening to the Lars Larson Show.
Lars.
Together, we can forge a new beginning for America.
The 45th President of the United States, Donald J. Trump.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And yes, together, we will make America great again. Thank you, God bless you, and God bless America.
Now, honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Today, we're doing the show on remote from our affiliate in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, Talk 107.3 WBRP. And I'm glad to be with you today. We'll get to your phone calls and emails in just a moment at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@larslarson.com. And one of the folks I'm most pleased to be able to talk to whenever we're able to get him on the air is Colonel Rob Maness, who is retired U.S. military. Air Force, in this case, and a former U.S. Senate candidate, as well as being the chairman of GatorPack.com. How are you doing, Colonel?
I'm doing great. How are you, Lars?
Well, I'm doing very well. I've been enjoying a couple of days down here in Louisiana, and it's a great state, but I see that you'd like to see veterans boycott the city of New Orleans. And I'm curious about that because while we were down here, one of our must-do things on the agenda for my wife and I was to go to the United States World War II Museum, which is located in New Orleans. Clearly, it's a very big draw for American veterans to come here and see this absolutely amazing museum. But you're suggesting that because of the decision to take out a number of Confederate monuments in the city, that that perhaps there should be a boycott of New Orleans?
Well, first of all, the reporting on this issue has been focused on the term Confederate monuments. And we were focused here in St. Tammany Parish, our Republican Executive Committee, which I'm a member, and I made a motion that we pass a resolution, which we did, to encourage veterans organizations that are planning on having their national conventions here, like the VFW is in July, and the Vietnam Veterans of America are, to use venues that are friendly to veterans, that respect veterans of all American wars, don't use issues such as racism and slavery and those kind of things to attack men who were serving their countries at the time. And these the monuments that we were talking about are those monuments. And as a matter of fact, even though they were soldiers on the wrong side in the Civil War, they were also American soldiers before that and war heroes before that. So we want to make sure our organizations, of which I'm a life member of the VFW and several other veterans organizations, are putting their tax, putting their revenue into cities and those kind of things that are friendly to veterans and honor that and that integrity and character that it takes to serve one's nation for all Americans. So that's the issue for us. And we want the VFW to do something like go out to the city of Kenner and use a venue there. There's some great folks, great convention centers there and those kind of things. And hotel taxes would go to Kenner instead of to the city of New Orleans, which, by the way, spent $2.1 million badly needed resources to remove these monuments in the first place.
Well, the only reason I mentioned that it was the Confederate monuments, Colonel, I'm with you. I think this is part of American history, and you can look back on it and say, well, it was the right thing or it was the wrong thing. You know, the fact is we could look back on even some more recent conflict in American history, even going back in less than the last 50 years, and say, well, Iraq was the right thing or the wrong thing. There are even loons out there who say that Afghanistan was the right thing or the wrong thing. The ones who say it was the wrong thing, I think it was the only thing that we could do at the time, but they could take issue with it. But the thing is, you don't go back and rewrite history and suggest that things simply didn't happen at the time.
Absolutely. And, we did not encourage folks to not come to the World War II Museum. It is a fantastic venue. And an uncle that passed away a year and a half ago that was a World War II veteran, we tried to get him down here before he passed. And it's a very important venue, but you can go visit that. But don't give the hotel taxes and the convention taxes and all that stuff to the city of New Orleans. Give it to a city in a surrounding area that does support veterans, that has plenty of veterans statues and monuments that they're never going to be taken down. And that's what we're asking folks to do, is just take a second look.
Well, and I think that's a sensible thing to do, to encourage people to vote with their own pocketbooks. Now, I'd like to know from you, Colonel, you've run for office. You wanted to be a member of the U.S. Senate. I'd like to know what you think we can do to kick the Senate in the rear end and get them to actually start doing their jobs. Maybe even tell them they don't deserve a one-month vacation in August simply because they haven't been doing the job that Americans sent them back to do.
I think the U.S. Congress, both houses, should stay in session until they get Obamacare repeal done and tax reform done. I don't believe they should be taking any vacations. That's what I would be calling for if I was in office up there. You know, it's a tough situation for them, but it doesn't have to be. They have the power and the ability, if their leadership will just take the proper approach and do the right thing, which is what they promised folks they would do and why they won the House, the Senate, and now the presidency. And the longer that they take to not do what they said they would do, the more likelihood is that they will lose that power that was given to them by the American people.
Colonel, that's been one of my frustrations, is that I've listened for years to the Republican Party. I'm a conservative first and a Republican second. I've been listening to them say, just give us the reins of power and we'll make sure that things get done. Well, they now have majorities in both houses, a Republican in the White House who's more than willing to vote on or to sign bills that they send to him. And now that all that's done, they come up with all kinds of clever, creative excuses for why they can't get it done. And I think a lot of conservatives are getting very frustrated with the Republican Party. And I can't find any reason to say they shouldn't be frustrated at this point. I don't think members of the party are not all of them, but I don't think many members of the party are doing their jobs. I think they're more concerned about hanging on to their popularity, hanging on to their offices, and not getting spoken of badly in the pages of the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, and the Washington Post.
And you're right, Lars. That's where a lot of folks that get into elected office get confused, or they think about it the wrong way. They think they need to hold on to their seat so that their party stays in power. The approach they need to take is, why was I elected in the first place? And what's the right thing to do by the United States and the American people and the people of my state or my district where I was elected? Those are the things that should take priority, not parties in power. And I know a lot of people say, well, you can't get anything done. Well, they're not getting anything done, are they? So it's time folks to step up and stand by their principles that they were elected on.
Hey, any thoughts on what we need to do to try to change the political discourse in this country? Because I know it's usually the left that's always telling the right that we should quiet down because we're the ones causing the problems. But it seems to me lately the folks who are staging attacks, and in the case of last week's attempted assassination of Congressman Steve Scalise, this is stuff coming from the left. And yet now the left decides that it's not really their problem either. It's someone else.
You know, Lars, the left complained about the Tea Party movement as being nasty and racist and those kind of things, but you never saw the Tea Party movement do what's been happening in this country since before Donald Trump was elected, even during the run-up to the elections. You know, people were getting violent from the left onto folks on the right, and it continues to that, and it's culminated in this assassination attempt of not just Congressman Scalise, but there could have been 20 or 30 dead Republican congressmen out there had Scalise not been there with his security detail, and that guy just been allowed to be able to rip on those guys. And the best thing that needs to happen is constitutional concealed carry without the need for a permit for law-abiding citizens, and we go back to the Second Amendment and use it for what it was supposed to be done, because somebody else would have been there and might have taken the guy out a little bit earlier.
Colonel, retired United States Air Force Colonel Rob Maness with us. We're live from the studios at WBRP Talk 107.3 in Baton Rouge, Louisiana today, and you're listening to The Lars Larson Show.
Home to honestly provocative talk, The Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to The Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you live from the studios at WBRP Talk 107.3 in Baton Rouge, although We're also on the Northwest Network, the Radio Northwest Network that covers all of Oregon and Washington. And I'm glad to take your phone calls and emails at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@LarsLarson.com. And here in studio with me is Jeff Cruer, who is the author, among other things that he does, of America's Last Chance. You were a member of the Trump transition team for Louisiana. Good to see you in person.
Hey, Lars. Thanks for having me.
So tell me what you make of the situation we're in now, 150 days into the Trump administration, and the president's trying to do the things he promised Americans he'd do, but he's having a little bit of a hang-up over on Capitol Hill.
I give him high marks, Lars. I mean, I think he's trying to go through what he promised the American people he was going to do, and go down the list. And I think he's doing a great job of following through on what he told the American people he would do. And the last thing, of course, rescinding the Obama-Cuba policy was another one of his promises, getting out of the Paris Climate Accord, which was a disaster. So one thing after another, and some on the right are criticizing him for not moving fast enough. But Lars, has there ever been a president facing more opposition from more sides than this president? I say no.
Even Ronald Reagan didn't face this kind of opposition.
Right.
And the funny thing is, you bring up Cuba. I wasn't crazy about Barack Obama making the decision to just unilaterally open up and do the kind of deal that Obama, I think, is going to be known for in history, a deal where we got next to nothing, where the other side of the deal went all to the other side, and where it didn't really benefit the Cuban people, if that's what you cared about. And I don't think it really benefited the American people, because it sent the kind of message that we were going to do nice things for a bunch of fairly evil people who treat their people badly and do it without them delivering anything.
Human rights abuses are up and tourism to Cuba is down. So it hasn't been working. So I think it's right for the president to look at it again and change it. And again, this is a president who's trying to do the job, but This investigation into him is really driving me crazy, because I think it is all about nothing. I don't think he did anything wrong. I think it's all to stop his agenda. And it's apparent to so many people that I talk to. Yet the mainstream news media, you watch the Sunday shows and it's all about this investigation. They don't want to hear anything else. It's driving me crazy. They want to create another Watergate.
Yeah, they really do. And they keep bringing Watergate up. But Watergate, you could at least say there was a burglary. There was money paid. Mm-hmm. There was money that connected back to the committee to reelect a president. Here, with Russia, they don't have anything. And the folks most directly involved who are not friends of Donald Trump, James Comey among them, the former FBI director, went asked straight out, do you have any evidence that there was any collusion between the Russians and members of the Trump team or Donald Trump himself? His answer was no. And Clapper said the same thing. And Feinstein said the same thing. And so you'd think that reporters 12 months into an investigation, which began in June of last year, would say, well, heck, if you haven't found anything after a year and you got some of the best investigators in the world literally working on it and you haven't found anything, what is it we're going to find? But none of the mainstream reporters want to ask that.
No, they're just salivating over this investigation. They think they're going to bring down a president that they hate, a president that mocked them, a president that ran against them, a president that called them the enemy. So they're out to get him. And it's amazing to me that we have Republicans, so-called Republicans, that are playing along here saying, oh, well, we've got to investigate. This is a serious investigation. We're really looking into it. And I'm thinking, well, what about health care? What about tax cuts? What about the infrastructure? What about the border wall? What about all the things that we elected you to do? We didn't elect you to investigate the president on nothing. But I don't know what Congress is doing. I guess I'm hearing good things about the health care bill. I guess they're meeting.
By August, they promise.
In private, and they're going to launch something, and maybe that'll be a good thing. But I'll be pleasantly surprised if that happens.
Although there, I have to lay a lot of the blame at Paul Ryan's feet, because if you've had 6 years to get ready and have a plan in place so that when the right president arrived, you could say, great, we've spent 6 years working on this thing. Right. Here it is. It's a done deal. We've counted noses. It's got the support. Mr. President, put your weight behind it. We'll get it passed. You sign it, and it's a done deal. Instead, it's as though Paul Ryan decided to finish his homework on Sunday night at 10 o'clock for a Monday morning due date.
Exactly. And I've been there, of course, in college. But I expected more from the Speaker of the House. You're right. I mean, it just was not laid out the way we thought. They weren't organized like we thought they would be. They didn't have their ducks in a row. They had to scramble. We went through one revision after another. They lost the first bill. They got the Freedom Caucus on board. Now we hope we got this Senate group meeting that's going to come up with something and it's going to pass, and we'll get it before August, as you say. What I'm really hoping for is tax cuts. I think that's the best thing we can do to help the economy. We got to get economic growth going again. We need to spur economic activity, and I think tax cuts are the best way to do it.
Well, you know, I'm here for WBRP. It's one of my great affiliate stations. We had a panel this morning, and they asked about cuts. I said, here's the simple way to do it. One, gigantically lower the 35% highest tax rate in the world. Mm-hmm. Two, go to, I would prefer, a single tax rate for all Americans. No deductions, one rate. Pay that, you'll get greater compliance.
Right.
Let me ask you about America's Last Chance, your book. You write about a lot of the problems of this country. We've got a gigantic debt, an almost insurmountable debt, and we have an annual deficit still. Although, I guess if we can get the tax cuts through, we might be able to actually balance the budget, according to Mick Mulvaney, in just a couple of years. Mm-hmm. How do we go after those problems?
Well, I think we're headed in that direction. I love the budget director. I love the president's budget. I love the plans that we've got in place. If we can just get Congress on board with the president, we've got, Lars, we have a Republican majority. We have the tools in place to get the job done. We're just not getting it done. So if we would just implement the agenda, the book is all about two things. One, the need to elect Donald Trump, because if we would have elected Hillary Clinton, we would have been on the road to Venezuela, in my opinion. Socialism disaster. So we elected him. The second part of the book is implementing the agenda, which right now is stalled. I mean, it's stalled. We have the Republicans. It's stalled because they're all wrapped up in this stupid investigation and they're not getting the job done. So if we could just implement the agenda that he ran on, I really do think we can move this country in the right direction and deal with the debt, economic growth, get people back to work, get people off food stamps, and really turn this country around.
See, I think that's the place when you start talking about food stamps, welfare, all the other social programs, we have a better economy today. So what better time than to start giving people a boot in the butt and saying, okay, get out into that better economy and get a job and start supporting yourself. And I understand it's not the biggest piece of the budget, but it starts to address the kind of entitlement mentality. I don't want some 25-year-old who's collecting food stamps, who's able-bodied, sound of mind, no kids at home, working age, not physically or mentally disabled. If you tell him at 25 that you can turn to the government to pay for your groceries, what's he going to expect from you at 45 or 65?
Well, Lars, you know, I'm from New Orleans, and over 50% of the African-American males in our city are not working. So we've got a huge number of folks that they're not plugged into the workforce. They're either on government assistance, they're doing illegal activities, but they're not being productive. And we've got to change that. And I think that's going on in urban areas all over the country. And I think we've got a president who wants to focus on urban areas, wants to focus on turning around the economy, and can do it. He's created jobs in the private sector. I think he knows business. I think we've already seen good things. It's just now just the first step on what I think we can do if we can get the agenda through. But I'm a little worried, to be honest with you, at what I'm seeing from Congress and in this ridiculous investigation as sort of sidetracking what I think is a great agenda. And if the American people don't see progress by the Republicans and the midterms come, then I don't know. They might just say, hey, Republicans, get out. You didn't do the job.
Maybe we need a term limit for federal employees as well, because you know what happened when Donald Trump from the private sector landed on the ground in Washington, D.C. He said, we're going to change all this stuff. Well, the fact is, if every federal bureaucracy was full of people who said, this never would have worked out in the real world, folks. We're not going to do it that way here, except what you have is people who do things the government way. His book is called America's Last Chance. He is Jeff Gruer. Jeff, thanks very much for coming by.
Thank you, Lars.
Jeff here with me in the studios at WBRP. You're listening to The Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It is a pleasure to be with you, and we're live today from the studios of Talk 103 FM WBRP in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, where they're just a short time away from celebrating their 200th birthday as a city. And today our thoughts and prayers go out to Louisiana Congressman Steve Scalise, who was the subject of a politically motivated assassination attempt last week in the Washington, D.C. area. He has now been upgraded to serious condition, and we will be talking about him in just a moment. We've got a lot to talk about in the Northwest, but it is a pleasure to be with you. If you want to join the best conversation in talk journalism, it's right here at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@LarsLarson.com. And it's a pleasure to welcome to the studio, and this is not my studio, so I'm lucky to know which buttons to push, Brian Trasher, who's a member of the Trump Louisiana Transition Team and a senior partner in Gulf South Strategies and the author of a uniquely named book, Laws and Sausages. Brian, it's good to be with you here.
Lars, thanks for having me on, and welcome to the great state of Louisiana.
We've been having a great time. As I told you, my wife and I are celebrating our 20th wedding anniversary this week, and we decided to make this a little bit of a fun trip, go around and sample some Louisiana cuisine, and she gets a chance to add a little bit to the local economy, so it's great to be here with you.
After 20 years, she deserves a vacation.
She does deserve a vacation, and you're absolutely she would second that notion. Hey, before we get to laws and sausages and local politics and all that, you were telling me that you're going to be in Washington, D.C. shortly, and you plan to go by and see Congressman Scalise. Tell me your thoughts on what happened last week.
Well, it's still pretty surreal to me. You know, I got up on a Wednesday morning and saw that Steve Scalise had been shot. I didn't know if maybe he was hunting or if he just happened to catch a stray bullet in D.C. or, you know, what happened. Somebody stormed the Capitol. One of his favorite things is the congressional baseball game every year. So it did not surprise me that he was out there that early in the morning practicing for it. It was horrific. And after an hour or so, I saw the harrowing images of him being rolled on a stretcher, which made it all too real for me. It went from being just a thought to a visual, and still trying to shake it off.
Well, I've been on the road the last couple of days, but I've been following it, and I got a chance to talk that day with Congressman Garrett Graves about what had happened, who had visited Congressman Scalise in his hospital room, and he said that, you know, he thought the man was doing well, and obviously over the weekend he's been upgraded from critical to serious. Some of us see a real pattern of people inciting and incentivizing people to go out and take violent action against politicians and people they disagree with in this country.
Yeah, I mean, it since the election, I think that there's a segment of the population that just cannot get over the results. You know, they were the ones that were kind of yelling at the Republicans saying, you better accept the results of this election. Donald Trump is going to lose and Hillary's going to be the president. And there's nothing you can do about it. And when the rug got pulled out from under them on November 8th into the wee hours of November 9th, I think that they had. Now, look, there's a lot of people who I know who disagree with Trump and don't particularly like Republicans, but would never even think about advocating for or committing an act of violence against somebody else. I think that guys like this James Hodgkinson, the shooter in D.C., you know, it's a lot like a young jihadist starting out, getting recruited and radicalized on the internet, and then maybe traveling to a Mideast country like Yemen to get formally trained. Hodgkinson, you know, started out on social media. He was part of a lot of Facebook groups that were very hostile and talked very violently. And then he went to Washington with a plan. Obviously, he had a list of Republican congressmen that he planned to assassinate, and carried out this this mission of his. He had a high powered rifle, and shot four people.
About the rifle, at the beginning when it was identified as an AR of some kind, but then we find out it's chambered in .308. That's a killing round.
Yeah, and that's why it fragmented and caused so much damage. People wanted to immediately, like Governor McAuliffe, immediately try to turn it into a gun control debate. But this guy Hodgkinson had a legally purchased gun, but he didn't have a history of mental illness. Mm-hmm. So there's no law that exists or you could have made that would have stopped him. I mean, the only thing that pointed toward mental illness is maybe the fact that he supported Bernie Sanders for president. I don't know. But gun control is only going to take guns away from people who need to protect themselves. And thank God Steve had his security detail, Crystal Griner, David Bailey, two people I've gotten to know well since Steve became whip. They've been protecting him. And, you know, we joke with Steve all the time, like, oh, Mr. Big Shot, you know, we can't beat you up anymore because you got bodyguards, you know. But I thank God they were there. And, you know, this guy, like I said, had a high-powered rifle. He hit four people, didn't kill any of them. Crystal Griner had a bullet in her ankle, had, I think, a 45 or whatever her standard issue is, and got two rounds in his chest from about 60 yards away, from what I'm told. So I'm glad the good guys had guns.
Now, you wrote this book, Laws and Sausage. When you never want to see either one or get one made. It's some practical advice to people about how to affect the process. But one of the things you've been trying to do is something practical for Steve Scalise, and that is to encourage Americans to go out and donate something very important.
Yeah, so my business partner is a member of the Knights of Columbus Marquette chapter in New Orleans, and he got the idea of, let's see if we can start a blood drive. We knew Steve was getting a lot of transfusions, and so he contacted his local council, which then reached out to the diocesan council, and then they got the Supreme Council up in New Haven involved. And they have been spreading this word all around through Knights of Columbus around the country. And he told me this morning that he got a report that over 1,000 or replenishment donations in the name of Congressman Steve Scalise. So folks like you and other media outlets who've been helping us spread this message, we were asking people to post on social media using the hashtag Scalise Strong. And if you can get out there, if you're medically able to give blood, we appreciate everybody doing it and keeping it up. And he's getting better. And we didn't want to just keep sitting around feeling helpless. Steve would tell us, you know, get off your butts and do something if you're feeling bad.
Well,
you know,
in fact, that's the advice you're giving people in this book, is you're telling people, go out and do the things to affect public policy.
Yeah.
Do you think an awful lot of Americans feel they're even able to affect the actions of their government?
No, I think people feel disenfranchised, and the system is, it's not set up to be very user-friendly, and that might be by design for a number of different reasons. But I see people protesting out on the streets and holding signs. You know, I ask them, why are you doing that? And they're like, well, freedom of speech is our greatest right. And I said, no, it's not. Our greatest right is a freedom to petition our government. You're out there holding signs and marching in the streets and sometimes damaging property. But the thing is, you're not accomplishing anything. The media is paying attention to you for a news cycle, maybe. None of the politicians are paying attention to you. The revolution is in the halls of government, not in the streets of America. I can promise you that.
Well, I told you before we came on the air, I said one of the things I encourage people to do is run for a local office like school board,
yeah,
which to a lot of people could sound, well, that's kind of unimportant. Well, number one, it's doing one of the most important jobs there is, dealing with how we educate kids and how an awful lot of public dollars get spent. I'd like to see a lot of people, and especially conservatives, because school boards in some parts of the country are dominated by liberals.
And unions.
And unions, and yep, they're going to push those attitudes and everything on our
kids. Look, we tend to bash on the millennial generation because they seem to be, for the most part, very entitled. They were always told how smart and brilliant they were, and that their ideas and their beliefs are never challenged. And so when they get into the real world and their ideas and beliefs are challenged, they don't even know how to handle it. They're like, what do you mean I'm not right? That's not even possible. And that starts in the school system during their developmental ages. And that's why I think it's a good idea that you brought up about running for school board. If elective politics like that is just not something that's in the cards for you, you know, if you live in a neighborhood that has an association, I mean, there's probably very few more dictators anywhere in the world than there are in neighborhood associations
in
around America. Yeah, definitely get out there and challenge that old guard and get elected president of your neighborhood association and quit getting nasty letters in the mail because you parked your boat in your driveway for the weekend. You know, I mean, it starts in the elective process, in the public policy process. And, you know, Laws and Sausages is pretty much just like a remedial brain dump on how to get started. It's not going to turn you into a professional lobbyist, but it's going to give you a good head start in how to go out there, contact your elected officials, and work the prosecutor.
Brian, it is a pleasure to have you here. We're live in the studios at WBRP in Baton Rouge, Louisiana today. I'll be back in studio on Wednesday. We're glad to be with you as well, and I'm glad to take your phone calls, too. We'll be back in just a moment. 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. You can follow us on Twitter at Lars Larson Show, on Facebook, The Lars Larson Show, and send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you live from the studios of WBRP in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. And glad to take your phone calls and your emails at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@LarsLarson.com. I want to go to James Hartman, who joins me now, since we're down here in Baton Rouge, who is a former cop turned crime novelist and also a political consultant. How are you doing, Mr. Hartman?
I'm wonderful. Thank you. Thanks so much for having me today.
So, I guess the question comes up after last week's attempted political assassination of Congressman Steve Scalise, whether or not words can be used as weapons. And it seems to me that there are a number of people in this country right now who are out there trying to encourage people to do the kinds of things that this man tried to do to Congressman Scalise last week.
Well, you know, harsh language is not new in politics. It goes back to, throughout the history of politics. It's not an unusual thing for people to say ugly things about their opponents. In fact, violence in politics is nothing new. You can ask Julius Caesar about that. However, it's reached the point where rhetoric is becoming the scapegoat for violent acts. And, you know, I had another column in the Hayride, which publishes my conservative ratings frequently here in Louisiana, just yesterday, in which I wrote that the shooting of Congressman Scalise and others last week happened for one reason, and that reason was a lone gunman from Illinois who decided to do what he did. Just as the attempted assassination of Congresswoman Giffords 6.5 years ago happened for the same reason. Mean words do not make people do mean things. And I really think that that's simply become an excuse.
I would agree with you on that you can't blame somebody's mean words for your violent acts. I'm simply saying that there seems to be an awful lot of language out there. Madonna talking about having thought many times about blowing up the White House. And as you mentioned, Julius Caesar, the play in New York that thankfully closed after about a week, in which they show the assassination of an American president, that those are the kinds of things that might actually inspire some of the nuttier, fringy people in society to go out and take action. It's one of the reasons that when people have come on this program over the years, I have never let anybody go on the air and suggest taking violent action against somebody who's merely a politician they don't like.
Sure, go ahead. And I'm glad you don't, and you won't ever find me using violent language or encouraging that in any way. The thing is, the incidents you cite, the Julius Caesar production in Central Park, I believe, and look at the Kathy Griffin incident just a couple weeks ago, her photo shoot. You know, those things are horribly inappropriate. But the nut jobs you mentioned, I think, are going to find a reason to do what they want to do anyway, whether it's incendiary actions and language from the left or from the lunatic fringe in our own party, Lars. And you know, we both have to admit that there is one. Now, that's not to say that I approve of those things or that I don't find them offensive. I do. But I think that we have to be very careful before we start assigning blame on harsh language for acts of violence.
And isn't that exactly what we're talking about? Is if you incite people to riot, you're not the person who breaks the windows. You're not the person who sets fire to a building. But you're the one who whipped the crowd up into a frenzy where you knew they would go out and do that. I think that Al Sharpton had some personal experience with inciting to riot. And I would hold him responsible for the words he said, although none of his words actually did the violent action, but they encouraged other people to do the violent action. And that's a crime in almost every community in America, isn't it?
Sure, absolutely it is. Inciting to riot, however, typically involves in-person rallying a real-life crew of people to commit violent or destructive acts. And I think what we've been talking about more recently has been the use of social media and fake news. And fake news sites and people on social media saying things behind a screen that they would never say in public or to someone's face. And that's, to me, a significant difference than standing on a soapbox with a bullhorn and yelling at a crowd already carrying baseball bats and sticks with nails through them to get them to go commit acts of violence or destruction.
No, I'd agree with you, but I would like to turn back some of the left's arguments on themselves. I mean, a number of years ago, there was a man who was beaten to death in the town where I have my broadcast studios, Portland, Oregon, and the man was beaten to death because of his skin color. And the three people who did it had been talked to by a guy who happened to be a white supremacist who encouraged people, young people, to go out and do the things he wouldn't actually do. He wasn't standing there on the edge of the sidewalk encouraging them to beat Mulugeta Sarah to death, but he was the guy who set them in motion. And that's what I worry about.
And I certainly understand that perspective, and I certainly would agree with you that the uber-liberal left has exploited language a great deal, especially here lately. But I don't think that we can claim that the uber conservative right is completely innocent in that regard either.
See, that's the thing. I'm talking to James Hartman, who is a former cop turned crime novelist and political consultant. I disagree with you about the conservatives, and I'll tell you why. Not just because I am one, although I've got a dog in the fight on that, so people might expect me to defend it. But I remember that we all looked for an uptick in threats against the president. I didn't see it. In fact, I thought I saw a whole lot more hanging or burning in effigy during George W. Bush than we ever saw during Barack Obama. And the minute anybody suggested anything that suggested violence toward the president, you know, the Secret Service paid them a visit, and most responsible people said, you can't do that. But I don't see that today. I don't see an awful lot of those folks who were anguished last week, and they expressed it publicly about Congressman Scalise's shooting. But when other folks within their ranks have said things that are you know, somewhat violent or suggesting of violence, I don't see the same kind of reaction then. And there was, you know, there was the attempt to blame Congressman Gifford's shooting on a Sarah Palin ad that showed, crosshairs on certain congressional districts. Well, as was pointed out at the time, crosshairs are used by everything from advertisers to others to indicate a target of some kind. It doesn't always mean a target for violence. It just means it's a target.
Sure, I use them a lot on maps when I'm doing political campaign consulting. You know, we target specific areas, and putting crosshairs on a specific neighborhood or precinct is not uncommon. Hey, look, I agree with you that when folks on our side misbehave, people like you and I call them out. And when folks on the left misbehave, the talking heads, if you will, stand up and defend them. And I do agree there's a double standard. I just don't think we can claim complete innocence on our side either.
I want us to mind our P's and Q's, too. We should keep our noses clean so that when these kinds of situations come up, we can say we don't do that and we don't tolerate it among the people that we associate with. What's your latest book, Mr. Hartman?
My latest book is a novel. It is a serial killer mystery set here in St. Tammany Parish, which is about 30 miles north of New Orleans. It's where I've made my home for 22 years, and it's called The Cleansing, which I can't give away too much, of course, but the title goes to the motive of the killer.
Thank you very much. That's James Hartman with us. We're live at the studios at WBRP, Talk Radio 107.3, and you're listening to The Lars Larson Show.